Ba 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 ba. Hip and the lip. Ba 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 ba. From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is a
Yes, good evening, everybody out there in Hip and Lip Nation. Hopefully, you have enjoyed the opening night of NFL 2016, as that's when you most likely will be listening to this, the conclusion of game number one, as the NFL opens, of course, in extravagant fashion. What else is new, as is typical of the NFL? But yes, good evening, a Thursday. That's right, a Thursday evening.
News break. Cam Newton's limping. Live. Oh boy, coming off the field limping. Uh oh. Fantasy people are freaking out. Oh God, who's the backup? Derek Anderson. Oh.
Derek Anderson. That's right. I saw him on the sideline. He was like talking to him, and Newton's like, "Yeah, yeah, go away. You're Derek Anderson."
Well, he might be getting up now. Cam Newton was being assisted to the bench.
Uh oh. Is a certain person in our fantasy league may not be too happy about that.
Thousands of fantasy owners across the country and world cringing. Oh, fantasy.
Oh, no, my quarterback. I don't care about the Carolina Panthers. Oh, but my quarterback. Oh, my God. What am I going to do? Well, if you're in a one quarterback.
I mean, we're making fun of ourselves, too. Let's.
Oh, absolutely. If you can't, make fun of yourself. Well, if you're in a one-quarterback league, hopefully you have a decent backup. But we're in a two-quarterback league, so God help us if any of our starters go down. But I have
That's what we're setting ourselves up for. In fact, I'll just quickly say, for leagues that start two quarterbacks, you know, I think that, you know, like a league like ours next year, we should propose to change the second quarterback spot to what they call a super flex, which means it's like a flex, but you can also plug in a quarterback. And the reason for that is, let's say you have a second quarterback and he goes down and there's simply no starting quarterbacks available on the wire, you can still plug in a receiver or a running back or a tight end. Average, they score fewer points. You're almost always going to want to use the second quarterback in that super flex spot, but at least it creates that flexibility. Anyway, you don't even have to react to that. Well, we're already going on more tangents than originally intended. As Cam Newton, it looks like he's starting to walk a little less slightly.
Yeah, he's fine.
A little less limping, a little less slightly. So yeah, we say a New York Islanders podcast, and there will be a minute or two of Islanders news in early September. This is evolving into a New York sports podcast, as the last few episodes.
Yes, the evolution continues. Yes,
indeed, and there's so much to cover and so little time, as the late Gene Wilder said. In fact, he said reverse. He said so little to do, so much time. And it is weird actually looking at Peyton Manning in the booth of an NFL game of the team that he watching the team that he won the Super Bowl with last year from the booth. Very, very odd picture to kind of take in right now. Makes me feel old that we kind of followed Peyton Manning's entire career. We were, you know, old enough to, you know, be following the NFL when he was a rookie all the way through. And we're just getting old, man. That's
it. But think about when you were a Jet fan. Think about as a Jet fan back in 97 when the Jets had the number one overall pick and Peyton had the option to come out of college after his junior season and the Jets would have drafted him, no question, number one. Instead, he stays. And the rest, as they say, is history. Speaking, though, of Gene Wilder, speaking of old, any thoughts? Now, for those that don't know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is maybe the hips, and he can confirm this, favorite movie, if not like top five of all time. Maybe all time favorite.
Top five at the very least. I don't know if I could give it absolute favorite, but I will give it top five.
All right. So, any quick thoughts on the passing of the immortal Gene Wilder?
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look. And you'll see into your imagination. If you want to view paradise. simply look around.
And you will.
All right. Okay. Next. I'm guessing
we haven't done a duet yet on the show. So
right. But I think the way that it records here, it's not simultaneous. I think it's like you're a second after me. And so it just sounds horrible.
Uh-oh.
All right.
All right. Next.
All right. So we're going to get through too much in too little time. Mets, Yankees, yes, they are still relevant. In fact, one of these two teams may actually make the – well, at least make the wild card round game, which is kind of remarkable considering how pessimistic we were weeks ago. And we have Jets and Giants week one games to preview in the NFL season to kind of, you know, set the stage for what should be, as always seems to be, an exciting – NFL football season with all the trimmings.
With all the trimmings, yes. NFL football Sunday with all the trimmings and all.
But before we get to the trimmings on your taint, let's cover your New York Islanders. What exciting breaking news do you have for us about the New York Islanders of Brooklyn?
Well, this is the way of the Islanders staying relevant during the non-hockey portion of the calendar year. As another article comes out in Newsday, broke this story, as there's been so much speculation as to the Islanders' contract with Barclays and when's the opt-out, when can they opt-out, is there even an opt-out, what's the deal? So apparently everything was secondhand sources, and the Islanders apparently got their hands on documents that confirm the actual details of the terms of their lease with the Barclays. So the Islanders apparently, I'll just, you know, run through this and then like get a thought in or two and then move it on. Because I've had enough of this Islanders moving, you know, after the lease. So who at this point, I don't care. They're at the Barclays next season.
I'm going to sit here and close my eyes and rest up to have enough energy for the rest of the show as you walk through this.
I promise this will be quick. Like, they're playing at the Barclays next year, so what happens after is anybody's guess. But bottom line is, after the Islanders complete their second season, so at the end of next season, the two sides will have until January 1st, 2018 to renegotiate the terms of their deal. If they don't reach renegotiate the deal, they can either stay with the current deal or choose to opt out. Each side has until January 30th, 2018 to deliver an opt-out notice in writing. If the Islanders decide to opt out, the team can choose to leave at the end of either its third or fourth year. And if Barclays triggers it, then the Islanders would have to leave after the fourth season. Very simple, but they have to in order to be able to trigger the opt-out, they have to enter into a good faith. Mr. You know, our resident attorney here, Mr. Hip, I'm sure, you know, hears this all the time. Good faith negotiations in order to be able to trigger the opt-out. The definition of good faith, who the hell knows, but who the hell cares? So we'll find out, I'm sure. There'll be more articles, more rumors, more conjecture and speculation about where the Islanders may move to. Whatever. You know, the World Cup of Hockey is a couple weeks away. And actually, training camp is a couple weeks away, but if you can believe it or not. And I guess we'll have to talk about the World Cup of Hockey, which is only a few weeks away as well. So,
absolutely.
Yep.
Did you say something?
I was trying to come across with a sarcastic tone when I said we'll have to talk about the World Cup of Hockey. I mean, you'd have to think
that these kinds of clauses are built into other – you know, team stadium agreements. You just wonder, is this one with the Barclays and Islanders being highlighted because, I don't know, people miss Nassau Coliseum? And so they're trying to find storylines?
Maybe. I mean, it's just weird, though, because the Islanders are tenants of this building. And that they have an unusual agreement.
Yeah. But maybe it's more common than we think. We're just not aware of it. That said, I don't think there's much more to add here. It is what it is, and it's probably nothing, and let's move on.
Yeah, well, the one other thing I'll say is that Gart Snow probably is still, you know, sleeping with his alarm set for October 3rd or whatever, whenever the season begins. So, you know, someone don't anybody wake up Garth. Garth is in his hibernation, his deep slumber for the remainder of the off season, even though the team is actually worse than last year. But anyway, I digress. We can get that out. We got the Islanders portion over with. This Islanders podcast. Let's move on, as they say. All right.
So the New York Metropolitans, as we speak at this very moment in time, have a half game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals.
Is that right?
As the second team in the wild card race, as the St. Louis Cardinals lost tonight. So the Mets have one win. They've played one more game than the Cardinals. The Mets are 74-66. The Cardinals 73-66. And the next closest team is four back from the Mets. Are 8-2 in their last 10 on a five-game winning streak. And in fact, the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, are only a half game ahead of the Mets with the same number of wins and just one fewer loss. I mean, geez, who saw this run coming from this team? Just, you know, seemingly their pitching staff just being ripped to shreds. And you have these Gazelmans and Lugos and Monteros of the world that are keeping them in games.
Yeah, the forgotten prospect, Montero.
It's a pretty and you look at their schedule, a better situation there.
Oh, it's tailor-made. I mean, their schedule's a joke. And the rest of the National League is just so bad. I mean, the Mets, I mean, things have broken perfectly for the Mets here with the rest of the National League falling off. I mean, the Pirates and the Marlins were there. Both of them have just, you know, went in the tank. I mean, they're both done. I mean, the rest of the National League is just terrible.
Should we give Terry Collins any credit here for keeping this team in the mix? Doesn't he deserve something? I mean, a month ago, we wrote this team off and said, you know, pitch rotation is done. Offense is, you know, home run or nothing. Curtis Granderson, the epitome of that. Well, they've battled and they've gone on this run here. I don't. It's pretty, and nobody's showing up to the games. I think if you look at the, I actually want to check the attendance for yesterday's day game at Citi Field. I think we're gonna be.
Well, they were in Cincinnati yesterday.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
But
thank you.
Well, we'll see what the attendance is against the Braves and Phillies and Twins when they play them. So those are the next, I think, home opponents for the Mets.
The Mets last played at home. Well, they played the Nationals on Sunday. I'm sure they drew a decent crowd for that one.
Yeah, I was there actually on Friday, last Friday.
That was 30,000.
Yeah, they had a decent crowd. I mean, weekend Nationals, I mean, you figure it'd be a decent crowd. And
the speaking crowd of them, Strasburg is probably done for the year. I mean, they have other pitchers there, you know, but.
Well, Scherzer is one of the top pitchers in the game, and you know, Washington is still a talented team. And I can't see that. I can't see the Mets catching Washington. I know that some cockeyed optimist Mets fans may actually think that the Mets could catch Washington. It's not inconceivable. We've seen teams blow big leads in September before, Mets fans. But I don't think it's going to happen this year. I mean, the Mets have this tailor-made to just waltz right into the playoffs, at least as a wild card. But here's what I'll say about the Mets. And I'm not going to, you know, yes, I give Terry Collins credit. The Mets, we did kind of leave them for dead a few weeks ago. But here's what led their resurgence. It was the return of Yoenis Cespedes, who, in my opinion, is the NL MVP this year. I mean, no player right now is more valuable to their team than Yoenis Cespedes is to the Mets. And I don't think it's even close right now. I mean, that's how.
Yoenis.
That's right. He is just so valuable to that team.
Yoenis. Valuable.
Seriously. I mean, he is in my opinion, the NL MVP, and I don't think it's even a debate. And you know, he comes back, the team starts to hit, this team starts to play better. Obviously against shoddy opponents, but Terry Collins deserves credit for, you know, keeping the Mets at least participating in the resurgence there and keeping the Mets afloat. But obviously these, you know, young pitchers coming up and, you know, these no-name pitchers coming up and, you know, doing a terrific job for the Mets. But here's what I'll also say is that nobody's going to throw the Mets a parade if they fall a game or two short of the wild card or if they lose in the wild card, you know, elimination game. You know, the Mets are coming off of a World Series appearance. Yes, they've had some big injuries, but nobody is going to, you know, call it a successful year if they finish short of the playoffs or if they go one and done. At least I'm sure most diehard Met fans would agree with that. Would you agree with that?
Well, it depends on the perspective you take. If it's compared to where they were going into the season, absolutely. But when you consider all the injuries they've sustained and how they've still managed to stay relevant this late into the year, I'm inclined to think that credit should be given to this, to the heart that this team has shown to stay relevant. So I don't know. There's different ways that you can look at it in that respect.
Well, you can compare them to the Yankees, and we'll get to the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees right now, you know, if they fall a game or two short, everybody's going to get up and give them a standing ovation for staying in the race despite trading off three of their best players, or arguably right. Their three best players. But, you know, the Yankees are playing with, you know, they're playing without any pressure, playing with house money. You know, the Mets still have expectations. Met fans are still expecting the Mets to get to the playoffs right. And make a run. At least that's what I would think most diehard Met fans would be, you know, approaching this last month of the season.
Well, now that the Mets are relevant again, but I think a month ago, the Mets fan would have said, well, maybe this season isn't meant to be with all the injuries. I'm okay with them not making the playoffs. But now maybe the expectations back that because they're if the season ended the second they would be in the playoff game. Well, let's we'll revisit this in a week or two and see how they're doing. And I don't know if DeGrom is going to come back. Matt's probably not, but they can backdoor their way into this with Yoenis.
As long as he's in the lineup, they if he's in, they go. He is the engine that drives that team right now. It is about him. It is about, Granderson is finally starting to hit. You know, they got a nice boost from Reyes. You know, that guy that we've talked about and, you know, still has that cloud that hovers over him. But, you know, he's given him a nice boost. But how about maybe Tim Tebow coming up and giving the Mets an even bigger boost?
It's so annoying to see these mainstream media channels.
TV oh, my God. The Mets signed Tim Tebow. He's here. He's back in New York, everybody. Oh, my God.
There's going to be reporters at this, you know, instructional league complex just following... Oh, what did he do today? How was your workout today? Well, we had a simulated game, and I took 20 pitches and swung at 30, and put 20 of them into play. Oh, so your BABIP is on the rise since last week, right? Jeez.
Hey, that they have to follow him, whatever he does. It's an infatuation with him ever since he burst onto the scene in Florida. It's just a national just fascination, and like cult following is what he's built up.
What has
for
he even done that? I don't understand what
I never understood it. I never got it, especially when he was in Denver and, you know, they're, you know, falling all over themselves in Denver. Oh my God, Tim Tebow. And I'm like, people, are you watching him play? He is awful. The guy is maybe the worst quarterback I have ever seen. Maybe even worse than the guy that's playing quarterback for Denver tonight. I mean, he was hideous watching him play. He was a great college player. Nobody will take that away. But, oh, my God, I just never understood it. And then he comes to the Jets and, like, sabotages Mark Sanchez's career, you know, just by him being there. And the Jets had no
coming
idea.
Coming on every seven plays. Yeah,
exactly.
So brutal.
On, like, Tony Sperano and Rex Ryan, like, should we put him in now? Is he going to do something positive? I mean, it was such a joke. And I don't know. And now he's playing baseball. And maybe next he'll be an ultimate fighter. Or, I don't know. Maybe strap some skates on. Maybe he can play defense for the Islanders. You know, they'll bring it. Give him a minor league. They'll give him a camp invite. How about that? All right, Tim Tebow. Goodbye.
Okay.
W guess.
So you did mention the Yankees before. Low expectations. This team is still staying relevant. I don't think they're going to make it because there's just too many teams.
Yeah, too many
between teams. Them and the playoff spots. And you look at their schedule, and it is just hideous. They really have to go 17-7 or so, I think, to have a shot.
I agree.
And that's 10 games over 500. They're 8 games over 500 now. Well, that doesn't count tonight's outcome. They
basically play like around 700 baseball and, you know, against very hard competition. They have 7 with the Rays. They just beat the Rays tonight. They continue to win.
So they're 8 over 500. They have to basically go another 9 over 500. They pretty much have to go 16-7 the rest of the way, I think.
I mean, figure they're probably going to need around 90 wins. So, yeah, so they're probably going to win.
Yeah.
They're going to need to win another 16.
They need to go 16-7. That would be the final line.
I agree.
And they're only 8 games over on the year, and we're asking them to go 9 games over in the last 19 games. So,
tall order. Too many teams. And the American League is, I mean, it's head and shoulders above the National League right now. I mean, you look at, like, how many, like, legitimately good teams there are in the American League. National League, it's the Cubs, it's the Nationals. I mean, the Dodgers are, you know, they've been on this run. I mean, almost
miraculous.
They
get Kershaw back. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing it without Kershaw. I mean, the American League right now is just that much better than the National League. And, you know, the Yankees, look, you know what? Just have fun with it. If you're a Yankee fan, I'm a Yankee fan. I'm actually excited to watch the team play. And just approach it like this. The team, you thought they were going to, you know, that they were just going to kind of go away and fall by the wayside as soon as they traded their players. Instead, they go the other direction. They're now young, exciting. They're fun to watch. Just have fun with it. There's no pressure. There should be no stress watching this. If they fall short, hey, it was a great run. Thanks for giving us some exciting baseball the last couple months, and you look forward to next year. That's the approach a Yankee fan should take, which is not the approach I would think that diehard Met fans will take. But, hey,
you know,
we'll see how it unfolds.
Maybe a month ago, we were kind of laughing at who was the face, you know, of the Yankees, and maybe we don't have an answer, but the pictures are a little less blurry now than they were back then, because we were saying Didi Gregorius is probably
Didi. Yep.
But you know, you have these young guys that are emerging, and we'll see if, you know, I think more credit to Cashman for making the moves, and it's panned out, and it shows a lot of excitement going into next year. All right.
Next,
I think we're ready to get into
NASCAR Ultimate Fighting
football for NASCAR.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Well, I'll let you take the lead.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Do. Or what's the injury music? So I can never do the injury music. Do. I can't do it.
It's a little slow. The injury timeout music
on
Fox.
The injury timeout music on Fox, yep.
It's a little slower and sad.
Yeah, it is very, like, it's very morose sounding, yeah.
So the first game of the NFL season is on as we speak and will be over by the time anyone listens to this. And so the full, you know, the main slate of games get going 1:00 this Sunday. So tonight we're going to talk about what we're looking for the Jets home opener and, you know, opening day against Cincinnati. And then the Giants at Dallas. It's a 4:25 game.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the hip will be in attendance for that New York Jets versus Cincinnati Bengals
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, well,
am
the
I
over
a Jets
under,
fan? I don't know, but I will be there.
Now, what? Well, I was going to say over and under on how long it'll take into the first quarter before you start laughing at like some kind of gaffe or miscue or turnover. but how about like predicting like what gaffe or which player will you know, either commit that gaffe or turnover or miscue that'll bring tears to your eyes, that tears of joy and laughter.
So here's one good thing about being at the game in person that I actually look forward to watching, provided the tailgating isn't too intense. Watching AJ Green against Darrell Revis or whoever's covering AJ Green, because I think that is like the biggest. That's the biggest matchup to watch in this game. You know, Cincinnati really doesn't have any significant pass-catching threats other than A.J. Green. And A.J. Green is a top 6 receiver in the National Football League. So the Jets should be out to stop AJ Green from any big plays. Is he going to get a few catches? Yes. He's absolutely going to get some catches, but it's the big plays that the Jets need to prevent. And so watching that, the coverages and the routes is something you can't really see on television. So it's going to be fun to be able to watch that chess match between, let's see, it would be, I don't know who the offensive coordinator is now for Cincinnati, but
Longer Hugh Jackson, so I don't know.
Exactly. Well, whoever's calling the shots there for the offense, regardless, that is to me the biggest thing to watch. There's a few others like, Ryan Fitzpatrick held out. Is there? You say hold out. He did get to training camp, but maybe he. I want to see how sharp he looks. You know, has he lost a step because he's a year older and because he's just, I don't think as good as he really played last year in general. I think he was kind of on cloud nine all season. So we'll see how that plays out. Now you have, instead of Chris Ivory, Matt Forte, who's been, attributed with the hamstring injury all preseason. Is he going to be at his full speed, which is not really a fast speed to begin with? So you have the Jets' new running game. Cincinnati doesn't bring as formidable as an offense as they've had because they lost Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones. They bring in Brandon LaFell and Tyler Boyd, who's a rookie. Tyler Eifert is out. The Jets have a very, very good run defense on paper, so I don't really see Jeremy Hill getting going.
Bench him if you have him in fantasy.
I'm benching him.
That's right.
and I have to start three running backs, and I'm not even using him among the three. I think Jeremy Hill's only going to be relevant if he gets into the end zone, which of course is always possible, but yeah, don't see a big stat line. Giovanni Bernard, he's gonna probably play a big role in this one, I think. So it's going to be can the linebackers contain him on getting those catches out of the backfield? In the end, I think the Jets defense holds up enough and the offense is good enough to get the Jets a narrow victory in this one. Cincinnati just doesn't really scare me on paper.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati's still a talented team. I mean, their wide receiver core is not as formidable as it was last year. I mean, obviously you still have Green, who, as you mentioned, is one of the top wide receivers in the league. But, I think Cincinnati will still be able to move the ball. Again, the Jets defense, as you pointed out, is could be a top defense. We've talked about this on prior shows. They could be a top defense in the league. I think this is going to be one of the better games on Sunday. This is two pretty evenly matched teams, going up against each other in week one. Now, week one, you go back, however many years now in the NFL, week one, you always have so many just wacky and just crazy games and finishes. And, teams are, they're sloppy in the beginning and they're not cohesive and they're not on the same page with certain, whether it's the offense or defense with blown coverages. And so, you always have to factor that in when you look at any game in week one, especially if you're in a suide league or, one of those type of leagues and you're scratching your head.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
I mean, this first week is almost impossible. Just close your eyes and point a finger.
Pretty much. Might as well, yeah, just throw a dart and just go.
It really feels like that this year.
Yeah, and you always have that week one in the NFL. But I think this is going to be a good game between, I think, two good teams. Cincinnati's defense is still good. Cincinnati coming off of that brutal loss in the playoffs against Pittsburgh last year.
It's one of the worst losses you've ever seen.
We talked about that. I remember that was, one of our first shows that we did last January.
Right.
We talked about that. It was just such a terrible – talk about just giving a game away. I mean, as much as you can give a game away, I mean, that's what Cincinnati did last year at home against Pittsburgh with A.J. McCarron playing quarterback and making plays for Cincinnati. But Dalton is back. He's healthy. And I think this will be – I'll give a prediction. You said Jets close. I'll go the opposite way. Not that I'm rooting against the Jets, but I'll say close game, Cincinnati, maybe by a field goal. What's the line on this game? I think – is Cincinnati favored actually in this game or the Jets favored?
Let's, I don't know. Let's see.
I say it was a very.
Wow. The Jets are, have 2.5 points. Very interesting.
They're getting 2.5. Wow.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I wouldn't expect that, but okay. Yeah. What's the biggest line? The Houston's getting 6 against Chicago. Kansas City's getting 6.5.
I think it's Seattle. Yeah.
10.5.
You're giving away 10.5.
I mean,
Miami.
Suicide pool, that's the.
Oh, that'll be the by far the biggest pick of the week of this week one.
All right. Well, good enough. Definitely. I mean, I don't know what else you have to say about the Jets game, but I look forward to breaking it down. And, you know, it's every team is optimistic. Well, pretty much every team. Maybe not every team.
Maybe not Cleveland.
I don't know. I think Cleveland has some optimism.
Ah, they stink.
What about why? I mean, San Francisco or
well, they stink.
San Francisco or St. Louis?
They stink too.
No, L.A. Now. Sorry, I'm so used to saying.
L.A. is a good defense, though. I don't think L.A. is gonna. I mean, L.A. could if their defense keeps them in games. I mean, yeah, their quarterback situation's. I mean, is a dumpster fire.
Who else is catching passes besides Tavon Austin? I know the answer. I'm wondering if you do.
Is that guy Brian Quick's on the team?
I actually
he was a favorite sleep. He was always a hip sleeper favorite. Was he not?
Kenny Britt is the number two receiver.
Oh, that's right. I forgot Kenny Britt, the Rutgers guy who was on his way to having a really good career and then just kept blowing out his knee. At least
I think
once.
Brian Quick had 10 catches last year.
And they do have Gurley. I mean, Gurley is a
yes
right now.
I don't know. I just.
I think LA will be. Well, I think they'll be an 8-8, maybe 9-7 type team this year. I think they have the potential to get there.
With Case Keenum at quarterback?
I mean, who knows how long he'll be playing quarterback if they'll eventually go to their number one pick, Goff, who right now is supposedly is going to be inactive. Think about that. Number one overall pick is inactive.
You know what? But I don't think that's. Incredible. You know what? We've seen the expectation has shifted over the years where rookie quarterbacks, okay, fine, he's a number one pick, I get it, but there's been a shift in an expectation that a rookie quarterback can have a positive impact on a team in year one, not just on his development, but on the making the team relevant in football games. And I don't know. I don't think it should just be cast as a negative on a number one pick if they're not in a position to do that right away, because it's just so much to learn.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's surprising that he's inactive, not even that he's not starting, just the fact that he's not even dressing. But no, you're right. I mean, hey, look back, going back 20, 30, 40 years, I mean, you saw quarterbacks sit. I mean, you saw as recently as Aaron Rodgers, you saw him sit for a couple of years. I mean, that didn't exactly hurt his career, did it? So, you know, Terry Bradshaw sat, Steve Young sat. So, I mean, you have so many examples of, all
Ty
God quarterbacks. Ty God, that's right. He sat too. So he sat in Baltimore before he got his break with Buffalo. So, yeah. Hey, I mean, it doesn't, I'm not saying he should be starting. He had an awful preseason. Jeff Fisher is not a guy that's going to say, out of hell with it, we'll just roll with him. I mean, he's going to play the best guy. Not that, Case Keenum. I mean, best guy. But I think, the Rams, they could be, like 7-9, 9-7 range. That's what I would predict for the Rams this year.
God. Okay. Okay. So let's get to your. Ben McAdoo.
Those guys. Oh, yes. The New York Giants. All right.
How do you feel about McAdoo taking over the reins? Now that we're 3 days away from actually seeing the first game of the year.
Yes, that's right. He's the new head coach, isn't he? Actually, it was funny. I was listening to him being interviewed this afternoon by the one and only Mike Francesa. Good afternoon, Ben. How are you? Thank you for joining us. Tell us about coaching your first NFL game. How do you feel? So McAdoo is, if there is one thing that he has mastered as head coach of a football team. See, coordinators usually, don't talk to the media. Some head coaches forbid coordinators from talking to the media. So all you have to do is just, be a coach. You never have to say anything. Ben McAdoo never said anything under Tom Coughlin. I don't think he said anything under McCarthy in Green Bay. hearing him talk, he has mastered the art of providing the most generic, cliched answer to every question he is asked. It is such a brutal interview listening to him. I mean, everything, you know, Francesa tried to ask him every which way. He even had to bring out a couple of times, well, Mike, I'm not going to divulge our game plan, on Thursday. Francesa wasn't even asking to do that. He was just, take the temperature of your team right now. You know, just asking him like those typical questions, especially for rookie head coach. Oh, the week leading up to it, how is your preparation? How do you feel about your team? You know, what are you going to do on Saturday night? You know, all that nonsense. And everything is, I feel good. We're in a good position. I think we're going to do well. Keep things simple. Run the ball. Stop the run. No turnovers. I think that was like his answer to almost every question Francesa asked. So don't even bother, folks. If you saw Ben McAdoo on the WFAN site and go, oh, I want to listen, don't even waste your time. It is a waste. 15 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
4:30 every Sunday. I'm sorry, every Thursday, check in to Ben McAdoo on the Fan, promoting another station, yes.
Coach, your team lost 72-57. Wow, break it down for us. Well, our offense played pretty good. Our defense didn't play so good. Next week we're gonna come out with a better effort.
Well, maybe, look, he's a new head coach and does he have the swagger?
Oh, he's brilliant. He has, He was brilliant. I mean, I got to give him credit.
Does he have the swagger of the Rex Ryans of the world? No, but you know what? He
sounds like
anti-controversy. He's just trying to minimize the media attention right now.
No brashness, no bravado.
That's fine.
You're right. That's fine. I'm just saying, he's not giving anything, but he sounds like an old school football coach. That's what he sounds like. I mean, McCarthy is definitely looked at as an old school football coach in Green Bay. He was under him. Obviously, Coughlin, we know. So, rookie head coach, you never know. But anyway, so getting, I guess, onto the game, rookie head coach for the Giants, rookie quarterback, and a rookie running back for the Dallas Cowboys. As we all know, Tony Romo, slow-mo, is out for at least they didn't put him on IR, but he's going to, who the hell knows? He may never play another down in the NFL. We'll see. But everybody's raving about this kid, Dak or whatever his name is, on Dallas. Amazing preseason. Oh, my God, fourth-round pick. Who would have thought? Look how good he looks. We'll say against real competition, especially halfway decent defense.
Yes, I mean, it's look, we love the shiny new object, the element of unknown. It's exciting. Let's take a step back for a second. Remember, this guy's a fourth-round draft pick. He's never taken an NFL snap. He's never seen a full package of blitzes and coverages and disguises. Not that I know anything about it myself, but he hasn't seen it in live action. And, playing in the preseason is one thing, but teams don't show all their cards, let alone half their cards, in the preseason. So he is going to face a whole new, it's just not even comparable to the preseason, what he's about to see. It's one thing if he has had some experience, but he is at zero. And so is he going to make some plays? Yes, I think he is, but let's not get ahead of ourselves and think that this guy is anointed as the successor for Tony Romo before he's even taken it down. So let's see what happens here. Now, of course, if the Giants surrender, 270-yard touchdown passes in the first half, yikes. I mean, geez, next week is going to be a rough discussion. But well, I don't even think this guy has a great arm.
To be fair, Mark Sanchez, now the backup in Dallas, did throw for 260-something yards against the Houston Texans in his first NFL game. Everybody was like, ooh, look how good Sanchez looks. And now Mark Sanchez is gone. His career is gone.
They do have Dallas has a good offensive line, so they should keep him upright, and it gives him chances to make plays. So it's good. What do you think? Is that going to be an interesting battle? The Giants with you know, Pierre Paul and the rest of the crew there and the Dallas offensive line, that's probably a matchup to really focus on in this one.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Giants, and we talked about the revamped defensive line for the Giants, actually have some talent along that defensive line, which I think could be really, really formidable this year. You know, we talked about that on prior episodes. Obviously, you know, the two bookends there with Vernon and JPP, and the two guys in the middle, Hankins and the former Jet, Snacks Harrison. So that's definitely going to be interesting to watch. Can the Giants apply pressure on Prescott? Just force him, you know, again, like you said, just giving him different looks and different blitz packages and, you know, showing him things, especially with real NFL talent, you know, as opposed to the guys that he faced in the preseason that he put up these, you know, gaudy stats against who are now either on the taxi squad or on the unemployment line. So, the Giants, sure the Giant defensive players against the rookie quarterback maybe licking their chops. You know, we'll see how that, you know, works itself out. But speaking of offensive lines, how about the Giants' offensive line, which was an absolute disaster in the preseason? That was one of the things that was asked of Mr. McAdoo today, and he was like, "Oh, I feel okay. They look good. They've had some good practices." But who knows? that's the spot-on impression as well. Who knows what to expect from that offensive line, which is just looked terrible in the preseason, was at times shaky last year. The Flowers, their former first-round pick on the left side, who I thought had a very good rookie year, apparently was very, very suspect in the preseason. The left side of the line from Richburg, who was a terrific center, Pugh on the, you know, Pugh at left guard, and then Flowers on the left tackle spot should be okay. Question is, how about that right side of the offensive line with two journeymen, you know, veteran players in John Jerry and Marshall Newhouse? How will they hold up? Well, that is one of the big things to watch in the early going for the Giants. I mean, Dallas is missing some guys on defense. I don't think Dallas' defense is that great anyway. Their secondary is not bad, but I think the Giants should be able to move the ball some on the Cowboys, and we'll see if they're able to put up some points, as that is something that the Giants offense did not do in the, at least their first team offense did not do at all in the preseason. So it should, I think it'll be a relatively high scoring game. I think it should be competitive. It usually is when these two teams play. I will give the Giants the edge though. I think, I don't know who's favorite actually in this one either. I forget.
I think it's an even line.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Even. Wow. Well, I'll pick the Giants. I think the Giants are a better team right now than the Cowboys, and I will pick them.
I mean, it's just such a big element of unknown with the quarterback, so it's hard to. There's a wider range of outcomes just given the element of unknown. He could be really, really bad and have to get benched, and God forbid they have to use Mark Sanchez. If I'm not mistaken, he's on the Cowboys, right? You mentioned
Yep.
This guy throws two interceptions in the first quarter. Is his confidence shaken, and now they're onto their backup already? I mean, it could go really badly.
I think it'll take a lot for him to bench him. I mean, he would have to look like absolutely horrible. I mean, maybe like three interceptions in the first quarter before they would consider making a move. But yeah, I mean, you know, quarterback matchup, obviously the Giants have that in spades with Eli Manning. And, you know, the Giants, you know, they have weapons. We talked about, obviously, Odell Beckham, who's one of the best receivers in the league. He is one of the great playmakers. He could be, you know, one of the great playmaking wide receivers of his generation. That's how talented he is. You know, threat to take the ball to the end zone every time he touches it. They drafted Shepard, who we talked about, who's on my fantasy team, who is very talented. Cruz, is back on the field practicing, so you hope that he can get back up to game speed. And you know, the Giants offense, if their offensive line keeps Eli Manning upright, you know, maybe again in the early going, we talked about NFL games, you know, the first week and or a couple weeks, teams looking sloppy in turnovers. And we've seen Eli Manning commit some turnovers in the early going. But if they can withstand that, weather that, I think it could have the makings of a very explosive and dangerous Giants offense.
I read something that I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. It was something like Odell Beckham has as many 100-yard games in like 17 games as Dez Bryant took like 50 games.
Yeah. Wow.
Something absurd. Yeah.
He is a playmaker of the highest order. I mean, he is that good and that talented of a wide receiver. And yeah, I mean, the guy is incredible. I mean, it's just, it's so much fun to watch him. I mean, every time he catches the ball, you know, he can catch a little, you know, 12-yard slant. And, you know, if he gets his step on his defender, I mean, you know, he's gone in the blink of an eye. I mean, he is quite the incredible athlete. But they're going to need more out of him this year. They're going to need him to be, you know, step up and be more of a leader, you know, especially after what happened in the Carolina game last year, all that nonsense that took place. You know, they need him to grow up. They need him to mature. They need him to be the leader of that wide receiver group and one of the leaders of that offense. You know, they're going to be relying on him very heavily, you know, throughout the whole season. And we'll see if he can live up to those very, very gaudy expectations. Hipster doctrine is suspended for Odell Beckham, folks.
Yeah. I'm just looking now. Odell Beckham has 15 100-yard games. Starting from 2010, he's been in the league a decent chunk now. In 84 games.
This is, wait, Bryant or Beckham?
Bryant.
Oh, Bryant. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Beckham. Yeah, no, Bryant. Yeah, sounds about right. Four or five.
What did I say? How many 100-yard games did I say he had?
Bryant, you just said 15, right?
I'm sorry. 84 right. Games. In 84 games. Yeah.
1,500-yard games in 84 games?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I mean, you would think it would be more. I mean, granted, he was playing with some shoddy quarterback play in there, you know, as obviously Romo has been hurt for some of that, but... I mean, you know, Bryant is a very... We've seen Bryant, you know, make some incredible plays. He is also a very talented wide receiver. But, yeah, he's been inconsistent. He has not been, you know, he shows flashes of greatness. And then other times, you know, he leaves you, you know, wanting a little bit. And, I mean, I think, you know, you're waiting for him to break out. I mean, could this be the year? I mean, now, again, he's not playing with his quarterback. He's playing with a, you know, a rookie fourth-round pick quarterback, you know, throwing him passes. You know, let's see if he can, you know, maybe elevate the quarterback. Because, I mean, that's what you hope for out of your big, you know, receiver to prop up your rookie quarterback. So let's see if he can do that in Dallas.
Guess how many 100-yard games Odell Beckham has had already?
How many games?
I'm asking you to guess.
No, I'm saying how many games has he played?
Oh, all right.
So he's played two full seasons. This is his third season. He missed the first four games.
Yeah, but the first season he played 12.
Okay, and he played – well, last year he missed – was it just the one he was suspended? He was suspended the one game after
yes.
the Carolina game.
He played
game.
27 games.
All right.
27 games.
27. Well, you did – well, I guess you just said, if I was paying attention, that he has more than Dez, so – I mean, yeah, 27 games. There haven't been that many where he hasn't gotten to 100 yards. I'll say 17 games of 100 yards.
It's 15 games. It's the same 15. Number as Dez Bryant.
Oh, same. Oh, he's the same. Okay.
In over 80 games.
That is incredible.
Incredible. That's incredible. Played 27 games.
That is incredible.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean. I mean,
last
it's just
year,
you know, the guy...
he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He had a stretch where he had 6 games in a row with over 100 yards.
I mean, think about his rookie year. You know, he burst onto the scene, and you know, it took him a couple games before he really, like, you know, found his stride. But once he did, he took off. I mean, and the guy has just been absolutely. And now, look, he's had a couple games where he's been frustrated. You know, especially last year, the Buffalo game, and his rookie year, the St. Louis game. I think, you know, he's expressed. You know, he's demonstrated his frustrations and gotten into, you know, just the side nonsense with some of the opposing defensive players. But
against St. Louis, he still had 8 for 148 and 2 scores. Against Buffalo, It was just 5 catches, 38 yards.
Okay.
Against Dallas, he had, you know, 4 catches, 35 yards. Actually, again, he really struggled against Dallas last year. 5 catches, 44 yards in the opener, and then 4 catches for 35 yards in the seventh game. Mm. He definitely struggled. But anyway, I just think, you know, it just shows the placement of how far Beckham has come in less than two full seasons. And meanwhile, you know, Dez Bryant, people still consider him a top receiver in the league. And I don't know, maybe he's overrated.
I mean, he's still a very talented wide receiver. Again, you've seen him make so many great plays, but he's just inconsistent. He is not demonstrating, you know, being a great wide receiver is not just making the flashy play and, you know, the great catch every now and again. You have to be consistent, make those tough catches, make those third down catches. I mean, that's where, you know, the great wide receivers really separate themselves from maybe like the flashier, you know, maybe more talented, but just not as consistent wide receivers. And yeah. I mean, that's what you look for. You look for a complete, you know, if you're looking for an all around complete wide receiver, it's a guy that's going to make every catches in traffic, catches on the outside, catches over the middle, third down catches, obviously, you know, touchdowns, making those tough catches in the end zone. That's what you're looking for. And Odell Beckham has the talent to, I mean, his ceiling, you know, is the sky. The sky is the limit with this guy. That's how good he is. The
highest ceiling of any receiver, I think. Higher than Antonio Brown's.
I agree. And Antonio Brown is a guy that's really, you know, elevated himself as a guy that, you know, came out of college, you know, as maybe a decent prospect, but has turned himself into one of the top, if not the best receiver in the league. So good for him.
So right, before next. We go, I will give you the opportunity to share any other storylines.
Eh? Uh-oh. Mr. Hip.
Hello?
Oh, yes, there you are, yes. I'm sorry, you were saying you wanted me to share something?
Yeah, unless you get disconnected in the meantime, and we'll call it a night. But if there's any if there's any story, NFL storylines or predictions that you want to share, just pick a couple as we descend upon the first Sunday of the NFL regular season.
Well, I tell you what. So we'll make a prediction for our Jets and Giants record and where they will place in their division. And we'll start with that. How about that? So you want to make a prediction for the Jets? I'll make one for the Giants.
All right, we're not going to do a win-loss game by game.
Oh, you mean like back in the day, the dog and the fat man? All right, Mike, we're going to go down the list here. So Jets, we're going to walk back. Also, what do you say? Loss. Okay, let's move on now. Week number two. Well, what do you think? Win.
The Jets have a pretty tough 6-game schedule here to start the year.
Yes, they do.
It's actually very tough. And they have 2 games. They have to play Brady twice. And they would consider themselves well positioned if they come out of the first 6 games 3-3. So let's say they do that, and then they take care of Baltimore and Cleveland. Let's say they lose to Miami. They beat the Rams. They lose to New England. They lose to the Colts. They beat the Niners. They beat Miami. 9-7.
All right, good for and
the 9-7, and it's a wild card. The Patriots, say the Patriots also go 9-7, but have the tiebreaker.
Ooh, how about that? That would be tough for Jet fans to swallow, especially with no Brady for the first 4 games. Like I said, the football gods were cruel to the Jets. I mean, those first, you know,
I haven't looked at the Patriots schedule, but I don't know. I don't know if the Jets are good enough to really just break through this year. I don't know if I see it happening. I think they're good enough to make the playoffs, but not be a 12-4 type team. I just don't see that.
Yeah, I mean, they like Garoppolo. I mean, that's a story. Talk about storyline. I mean, that is a big storyline. The first four games, no Brady. Garoppolo, is he the real deal? Patriots like him a lot. Hear all good things about him. You know, we'll see what kind of a quarterback he is. I mean, we know he'll be sitting down as soon as Mr. Brady is back. I mean, they could be 4-0. You know, we know that he'll be taking a seat, at least I would think, as soon as Brady is ready to come back. But that is obviously a big storyline, and I'm sure that they will promote the hell out of week number 5 when Brady comes back, as the NFL is best at. So, all right, so 9-7, and you think that is good for a wild card for the Jets? I mean, it's so tough, difficult to predict that, but all right, sounds good. I think Jet fans would sign for that right now. All right, Giants, I will say, looking at their schedule here, which is not easy. I mean, they have, they're out of conferences against the NFC, AFC North. So you have the Steelers, you have the Bengals, the Browns stink, and the Ravens, who knows. But their division is obviously, we've talked about, very weak, or at least it appears it could be very weak this year. I'm going to say I'll be optimistic. I'll give them 10 wins. I know it's a kind of a cop-out. Just say 10 wins. And I think they'll be better in their schedule and the division. So I'll say 10-6, division title. They will edge out the Washington Redskins, who will finish 9-7. I say that the Cowboys go 8-8, and the Eagles will finish at, I'll give them a 5-11.
Yeah, the Eagles might be pretty bad this year. With, not that Bradford is a savior of a quarterback, but
The trade made sense for both teams. I mean, that was a trade. I mean, they gave up too much, Minnesota, but Minnesota had high hopes for this year. They didn't want to throw the season down the drain with Sean Hill at quarterback. So,
I've always had a small man crush on Sean Hill.
He's like the I don't know. What was a good example? What's a good analogy to Sean Hill? I'm trying to think. Maybe like a Steve DeBerg back in the day. I don't know. Who's like another like journey?
Well, I hoped. What I had hoped is that Sean Hill turned into what Jeff Garcia was.
Mm.
But he never came close to doing that. No. What Jeff Garcia did.
That he didn't.
Just a journeyman backup who suddenly came in and for the 49ers. And I think Jeff Garcia the first? No, he wasn't. There was Kyle Bowler was there.
Kyle Bowler.
Well, this is like right after Steve Young hung up his cleats.
Yeah, well, Kyle Bowler actually, I think, was taken by the Ravens. Garcia, you're right. No, Garcia was, I think, a backup to Steve Young. Young played through, I want to say, 99, or it was around there. Yeah, because Garcia like took over. Maybe he didn't take over right after Young, or maybe he did. I forget. But
no, because they had somebody else, because I remember Garcia took over midseason and then was a sex.
Wait, was that when you got him for a dollar?
Yes. Because he was a starter going into that season, but he took over, I think, for Kyle Bowler during the season prior.
It wasn't Kyle Bowler. Bowler was a pick of Baltimore.
Who am I thinking of then? I keep saying Kyle Bowler.
I don't remember who bridged the Young to Garcia. Garcia was the quarterback of the 49ers, of course, when they broke the hearts of Giant fans in 2002. If you remember, we were watching that game in Michigan as the Giants had a 78-point lead or whatever it was, and they blew it in the second half and saw this 49ers led by Jeff Garcia and Terrell Owens come back and beat the Giants. So that was one of the worst losses I have experienced as a Giant fan, Jeff Garcia being the quarterback for the 49ers.
I don't know. In 99, it was Steve Young, Steve Stenstrom, and Jeff Garcia. Ty Detmer was there for a
year. Ty Detmer.
And Tim Rattay a few years later, but
Tim Rattay.
I think Ken Dorsey and Alex Smith. I don't know. Maybe Jeff Garcia did take over. We'd have to dig into this. Maybe Jeff Garcia. Didn't Steve Young get injured during the year and that was it? Was that what happened?
He may have. It's possible.
He played three games.
You remember Giovanni Camardi? You know a draft pick out of Hofstra. Hofstra quarterback, a draft pick of the San Francisco 49ers.
He was never started a game for them.
Yeah. Couldn't tell you, but
so in 99, Steve Young played 3 games, Steve Stenstrom 3, Jeff Garcia 10. And so in 2000, Jeff Garcia, and 2001 and 2, Jeff Garcia started all 3 years, all 16 games.
Wow. Yeah. How about that?
All right, well,
all right, next.
Expected to discuss
into the career of Jeff Garcia, or the San Francisco quarterbacks, the bridge from Steve Young to Jeff Garcia.
All right, I'm good here. I'm ready to you know, follow the games on Sunday while watching the Jets and get the season started and pay attention to the baseball and start getting ready for the Islanders. I mean, a little bit. I think it's still in the back burner, but
yeah, before you know it, training camp will begin, and we'll be talking about how the Islanders may actually be worse than they were last year.
Yes, yes. Josh Bailey.
Oh, go away, Josh Bailey. When are they going to trade him?
All right. Well, all right, next. I will leave you with any, you know, last chance for parting words.
Yeah, I think we're good. We
covered
a lot of ground here. And we will break it all down after week one of the NFL.
Break it down. I'll break it down.
We'll go around the league and we will break
everything. I'll break it down on your anus. All right.
Fans hope. All right, next. Bye.